the world in my name is Chris. I am, as always, joined by the lovely Harry. And we have, you know, as always, we have a lot to talk about, but we have quite a bit more than usual to talk about. We've got potential takeover talks from clubs. We've got some European bottle jobs. And, you know, as has been commonplace, and we've got some shock Premier League results to go through. So I better just jump straight into it. Yep, and I will start with very surprising demolition job on a Friday night. Leeds just absolutely, you know, rolling over Aston Villa.
Bamf.
No, I mean, you know, well, even in the Championship, he wasn't, you know, a very prolific striker. It always took him, you know, two or three chances to score. But I don't know, it just seems like under Bielsa, he's just started to thrive. Well, it's not even under Bielsa, because in the Championship he wasn't great. He wasn't, like, excelling. But it's just this season he's just managed to kick on. I don't know if he's just got some extra motivation or something or what, but, you know, he's just, you know, someone must have flipped the switch, because, you know, he's absolutely, you know, played brilliant in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, Leeds in general played really well, I thought.
The ground C 7-9 on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, probably, yeah. I mean, you know, that Villa just absolutely rolled over. I mean, they didn't really show anything, you know, or at least anything close to the first four performances of the season. Grealish created a couple of chances, but he was sort of the only Villa player who made anything. You know, Ross Barkley, who we, you know, were full of praise for during, you know, the 7-2 win against Liverpool. You know, he was almost non-existent in this game. John McGinn as well, another one who, you know, I was a big fan of his last season. He was nowhere to be seen. Ollie Watkins, you know, the £30 million striker, you know, one of the most prolific strikers in the Championship last season. He was nowhere to be seen. You know, so, I don't know, the key players just didn't show up for Villa. And Leeds, you know, quite effectively took advantage of that.
To go.
Well, I mean, I know Tyler Roberts can play up. I know he did in the youth team. Ivan Pervada, I'm not too familiar with, but I believe he could go up front. And of course, they do have Rodrigo as well. What's that? Yeah, but Rodrigo can play up front. I think that's something that Bielsa likes, is for his strikers to be able to drop back into midfield. I mean, we saw that last season with Bamford, occasional. And it's something that we've seen this season with Rodrigo. I feel like Bielsa likes his strikers to be flexible. And of course, they also have, I completely forgot about, Joe Geldart as well, who came from Wigan. So there is options up front.
Mm.
Yeah, well, I think it's a very fluid system, is that for that 4-1-4-1 sort of, like, because you do see the wingers cut inside, you do see the strikers dropping deep and the attacking midfielders going out wide, and it is a very flexible system, sort of similar to Pep Guardiola's 4-3-3 at Man City. You often see, you know, the midfield players going out wide and the wingers cutting inside, so, you know, the players aren't just tied to their position. Most of the players do have free roam.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's not really much else to say. It was just a very effective performance from Leeds. And Villa, you know, this could be, you know, it could just be a temporary blip, or it could be the season officially catching up to them now. You know, they're obviously a very strong start, first four wins. And the next few games, we've got Southampton, Arsenal, Brighton, West Ham and Newcastle. So there's definitely some winnable games there. And we'll be able to see, you know, whether Villa can get back on track, challenge for a European spot potentially. Or, you know, whether it was just a strong start and we do see it. Well, there won't be, you know, anywhere near the relegation. But, you know, they could potentially be challenging those top seven, top eight positions. Come the end of the season, if they manage to steady the ship. I mean, I personally don't think they will, but it is definitely. Yeah, I mean, the effect of fans not being there has we've just seen crazy results. I mean, yeah, if you've got nothing else to say, we'll move on to West Ham surprisingly getting a draw against Man City. You know, West Ham playing a five at the back. You know, very compact football against Man City, and it worked. You know, a beautiful cross from Koufal to get Antonio's overhead kick, which, had it not gone in, probably would have been a penalty. Just, you know, in just under 20 minutes. And from there, West Ham, you know, defended really well and worked hard for that
point. Result in City in possession, but only have 47.
Yeah, I do think once Foden came on in the second half, and then when Kevin De Bruyne came on as well, with about 20 minutes to go, they did look a lot better, City. But, you know, like you said, it just goes back to the City that we saw last season, where, you know, they had all the ball, but they weren't moving it effectively. They weren't, you know, finding those little pockets of space, picking out killer passes. Like we have seen, you know, two, three seasons ago, you know, Pep Guardiola managed to get a 100. The City team, it just looks, I don't know, stale. Is that the right word? I just think going forward, you know, well, they haven't really bought anyone going forward. I mean, they lost David Silva and they lost Leroy Sané. They brought in Ferran Torres, but he doesn't seem like the finished article yet. Obviously, he's one for the future. He's not really picking up many starts besides in cup competitions. So that leaves them with, you know, Sterling, Mahrez, and Aguero up front. That's who they started with. And then they've got, you know, young kids like, you know, like Ferran Torres, but also Delap, Palmer, who's on the bench. They could have really done with bringing in another winger, and possibly another forward as well, because with Gabriel Jesus injured, they are looking surprisingly light up front.
Yeah, I feel like...
Yeah, I think with Kyle Walker and Cancelo playing on the left, not necessarily on the right, but when he's on the left, both Walker and Cancelo do seem to go for more underlaps, which, when you've got Sterling and Mahrez cutting inside on a stronger foot, you are lacking the width to, you know, get to the byline and get a cross in. And they do seem pretty predictable, Man City. You know, and West Ham, you know, managed to stay very compact, and they managed to counter it relatively easily.
West Ham could have easily won the game. Lucky outside goal, really comfortable. Like you said, they were.
Yeah, it feels like someone's got to give with this City team. You know, I mean, if they play like this, you know, there's no way they're going to win the Champions League this season. I don't think they're going to win the Premier League this season. So, with that being said, if Pep Guardiola goes another season without winning the Premier League, without winning the Champions League, is he on borrowed time? Because at the end of the day, you know, ever since those Man City owners took over in 2008, their goal was to always be to win the Champions League. And Pep Guardiola hasn't even gotten to a final yet, you know, despite the amount of money that they've spent, despite the success that they've had in the domestic Premier League. He hasn't even gotten to a Champions League final yet. And they look miles off of a Champions League final. Is that Pep's fault? And if so, can you see Pep not necessarily being in trouble, but can you see his time being limited?
Spend their money and spread it out. See a lot. And they put Fernandinho.
But how much of that those transfer dealings are down to Pep Guardiola? I mean, I've no clue how much say Pep has, but, you know, that could be down to Pep. That might not be a director of football making those decisions. I'm sure Pep has, at the very least, some influence in the signs that are made. And I don't know, I just think this City team, they look stale. And, you know, the simple solution is to cut Pep. I don't think it's the right decision. But it's more likely that the owners would look to cut Pep than to spend, well, I'm not going to say than to spend more, because this Man City board have spent quite recently, but it's easier to sack the manager than to completely overhaul the team. Yeah, well, I don't know how long, I believe his contract's coming up, Pep. I think it's the end of next season his contract's coming up. I'd have to double check that. At the end of this season, Pep's that his contract expires. So this could potentially be the last season at Manchester City for Pep Guardiola, should he not win the Premier League or the Champions League.
Yeah, last season?
I believe so, yes. I mean, the Community Shield doesn't count, so the only trophy they won was the League Cup, yeah.
Yeah.
At a club like Man City, you can't know. I mean, you know, I'm not necessarily a person who thinks, you know, trophies are success, because at the end of the day, at most, five English teams can win a trophy. You know, you got the Premier League, the League Cup, the FA Cup, and the Champions League and Europa League. So, at most, only five teams can win some. So, you know, trophies shouldn't be the sole measure of success. But when you spend the kind of money that Pep Guardiola has, when you have the expectations of a club like Man City to win the Premier League and the Champions League, questions are probably going to be asked, especially with Pep's contract.
And the whole lot of bringing in and building.
But at the end of the day, that's just what they have to do. I mean, you look at this Man City team that played West Ham. I mean, you know, you look at players like Gundogan, players like Kyle Walker, Eric Garcia, Aguero's getting older. You know, that doesn't scream Champions League winners. And especially if you look to the bench, you know, they've got kids. I'd argue that the West Ham bench looked almost as good as the Man City bench. If it wasn't for Kevin De Bruyne, I'd probably say that the West Ham bench looks even stronger. Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, for this season at the very least, you know, is a possibility that, you know, teams have to be aware of. Have you got what else more out of that game? Oh, yeah. Especially last season, you know, we were constantly saying, you know, even when they beat, was it Watford that they beat 8? Yeah, even when they beat Watford 8-0, you know, we were saying it should have been more. It just feels like the cutting edge has gone from this Man City. You know, someone has to give, whether it is, you know, bringing in a star winger, a star number 9. Because at the end of the day, they have probably one of, if not the best creative midfielder in the world. So creating chances has never been a problem for them. And, you know, at the end of the day, when you've got forwards like Aguero, like Jesus, like Sterling, like Mahrez, finishing shouldn't be a problem, but it is. So are they lacking, you know, a star winger or a star number 9 to really help them finish the chances? Yeah, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. Sergio, you know, up there in terms of Premier League forwards of all time. You know, well, not all 82, but, you know, in terms of players in the Premier League era, Aguero is up there. You know, he's scored over 100 goals for Man City. He's been there 10 years, constantly been at the top of his game. You know, he's been unlucky, because he's never had a season of 25, 30 goals, because he's constantly had nagging in. But he is up there as an all-time Premier League great. However, the pressure is on him too much, and especially as he's, you know, getting older. I mean, he's 32 now, so, you know, you don't want to have to be relying on those sort of players to keep producing, you know, the same performances that they would do 5 or 6 years ago. I think Gabriel Jesus, I am a fan of, personally. I feel like I'm more of a fan of him than but he hasn't kicked on. If you played Jesus in every game for Man City, would he get 15, 20 goals? I'm not sure he would. So perhaps they are just lacking a striker who has that bit of quality and you can consistently rely on it. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, put Harry Kane in that Man City team, and I think City walk though.
Yeah.
And West Ham have lost Antonio as well. He's injured for a month, is it? So that's a big loss for them. Probably their most direct and, you know, dangerous forward. So Allaire's probably going to get some minutes up front to see, you know, if he can impress where he didn't last season. But that's a big loss for West Ham. Yeah. Especially with, you know, West Ham coming up against... they've got Liverpool and Man United within the next 5. You know, you could do with a player like Antonio being up front for you. Palace back to winning ways. A pretty decent start for Palace this season. 3 wins, a draw, and 2 losses. And the 2 losses, you know, came against Everton and Chelsea. So, you know, teams who at the start of the season you would have expected. Wolford Zaha, you know, played really well up front. And yeah, it was a another clinical performance from Palace. They had like roughly 30% possession of the ball. You know, and it was just typical Fulham and typical Palace, to be honest with you. Fulham, you know, were content, you know, passing it around in the midfield. But at the end of the day, they didn't really create much. Only three shots on target with 64% possession and three shots on target, which isn't good enough if they want to stay in the division. And Fulham, you know, they do look in serious trouble, particularly if they can't get a win on the board. On Monday, it's a crucial game for them against West. Both teams need a win. It's a, you know, a typical six-pointer. And yeah, not it was a pretty poor performance from those. Yeah,
Areola made 8 saves.
It was Kamara. Yeah, it was just, you know, completely unneeded. You know, and that effectively killed the game. If it wasn't already dead, it was just you know, there was no need for it. And yeah, that's killed the game for the full. Well, yeah, they did score in the 95th. I mean, you know, but that was more of a bit of brilliance from Tom Kearney rather than out to do with Fulham's team performance. It was a brilliant shot from outside.
And why?
I can't remember, but I'm presuming time wise. But yeah, Palace looking decent as well. They didn't really make too many signings, Palace. Obviously, they brought in Nathan Ferguson, and they brought in Eze. And on the last day as well, two deals that might have flown under the radar a little bit, they brought in, obviously, Nathaniel Clyne on a free transfer, who, if they can keep him fit, would be a pretty decent signing for them. They were needing a right-back. And they brought in Jack Butland from Stoke for £1 million, you know, which is, when you consider where Butland was, you know, 3 years ago, £1 million would seem like a bargain, but his career has just fallen off a cliff. He was pretty awful in the Championship, just constant error after error. So hopefully for him, this move to Palace will be able to get his career back on track. But I can't see him displacing Gaeta.
Surprised him?
I don't know, to be honest. I mean, you know, I think they've got either the oldest or the second oldest squad in the league. I don't know. I mean, the only thing that worries me about Palace is that defence. I mean, going forward, they have a lot of attacking options. You know, they've got Zaha, Ayew, Batshuayi, Townsend, Eze, Jeffrey Schlupp. So they've got quite a few good options going forward. Even Christian Benteke gets. It's just that defence that's a bit dodgy. Mitchell is only a young kid. He's going to make that. Scott Dan is that. Kouyaté, although he's done well playing, Clyne, they'll probably struggle. I'm a fan of Sakho, but, you know, like, he's not great. So, yeah, that defence is probably where Palace. Oh, yeah, it was probably one of the players of the season for Palace last season. He was a very good leader, someone who Chelsea could have done with last season, potentially this season, you've used. Yeah, it was rock solid at the back for Palace. And yeah, they definitely are missing. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see on Monday that Fulham West Brom game. See if either team can pick up the first win before both teams beat the other at the start of the season. We'll move on to, you know, a very compact, very close, very boring. I was trying to skirt around the word, but move on to the 0-0 between Man U and Chelsea. I'll let you have the floor first.
Mendy, Curling, Kors, Sturman, sort of dominant. Outside of that, Maguire. Despite scoring one goal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in terms of this new Chelsea attack, like, it just doesn't feel any more dangerous. Like you said, it doesn't feel any more dangerous than last season. I feel, you know, you've got players on the bench. You know, you've got Tammy, you've got Olivier Giroud, who, you know, I'm a huge fan of Giroud. I think he's a class player. You've got those two on the bench particularly, who, you know, last season, they were firing on all cylinders. And I think, you know, forcing them out for Timo Werner, who hasn't played well, Kai Havertz, who hasn't played, and an only just returned to full fitness Christy Pulisic. I don't think that's the correct move. I think we've seen with Lampard with quite a few individual cases that he is a very stubborn manager, very reluctant to change things. I think that could be the case with Werner, you know, because he hasn't performed up to par, and the same with Havertz. Now, you know, I'm not suggesting, you know, oh, you need to immediately bench your £72 million player, because, you know, realistically, that's not going to happen. But Chelsea could do with switching it up. Now, they did switch it up in this game, going to the five at the back. And defensively, that definitely solidified things up, along with the inclusion of Mendy over Kepa. But, you know, in terms of going forward, they didn't really create anything. I feel like maybe potentially dropping one of Jorginho and Kante, moving Havertz into a midfield role. Because between Jorginho and Kante, you don't really have any sort of dynamism in that midfield. You've got Kante, who works best, you know, as a sweeper, as a ball winner, and then just gives it away to his more creative teammates. And you've got Jorginho, who sits deep and delivers crossfield balls. Both players, you know, have their uses. But it feels like with them as a double pivot, it doesn't really work. I mean, pretty much all of last season as well. Yeah, it just feels like this Chelsea team lacks any sort of dynamism. I feel like Ben Chilwell has probably been one of your best attacking players you've really been impressed with.
Yeah, I haven't really got much else. This game's highlighted well, Thiago somehow regressed 200.
Yeah, and this is what I was sort of alluding to at the start of the season, is, you know, how long will Lampard keep the likes of Abraham on the bench, and will Abraham be happy with that? Because at the end of the day, if Abraham isn't playing, if he isn't advancing his career, he's not going to be able to get into those England teams. What is, you know, will be his goal. So I'm just wondering, you know, how long will Abraham take sitting on the bench? If we're still seeing Abraham, you know, only having one or two Premier League starts come January, could Abraham look to potentially move on?
Shown any, you know.
Well, it's not really fair to judge players off of, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes off the bench, you know, because most players aren't going to make that much of an impact with, you know, quarter hour. Whenever Abraham has started, he's, in my opinion, looked a lot more impressive than Timo Werner. And I believe Abraham has more goals this season than Werner. I could be mistaken in saying that. I might be mistaken, but I think he does. Well, he scored against Thingy, didn't he? He scored against West Brom, yeah. Ah, right. Yeah, I forgot about that. And yeah, I agree with you that, you know, you should have got a penalty on the Maguire challenge on Azpilicueta. I think that was pretty much stonewall. And United probably looked the better of the two teams,
yeah.
Overall. And that's with them, you know, not playing key players like Martial, who you got Van der Beek, Greenwood, who are on the bench, Alex Tellez, start, Paul Pogba, another one who came off the bench, got half an hour. So yeah, you know, this United team, they just, you know, this has probably been their best performance of the season. Not great. I mean, you know, or at least that I can remember. In the league, at least, it's probably their best performance. I mean, we'll talk about the Champions a bit later on. But yeah, they've just not impressed in the league so far. I mean, they're down in 15th place, 7 points from the first five games, a negative three goal difference. You know, you just look at that United lineup. You know, you've got Scott McTominay, Daniel James, Juan Mata, players who have quality in them, but they're just, you know, they're not at the level what Man United are wanting to be at, which is ultimately the top four.
In the games that he's been given, the other two.
I mean, he, you know, he's shown flashes, Juan Mata, definitely. I think the game against Newcastle, I think he definitely excelled in that game. But he's very hit and miss, Juan Mata. Very inconsistent.
Going back to the penalty, if that was...
I mean, you know, Man United did get a lot of penalties last season. That is a fact. And whether that is, you know, that is a byproduct of Man United getting a lot of bodies into the box. You know, whether they are all justified or whether some of them have been dodgy. Man United do well in, you know, loading the penalty area to, you know, potentially get a shot off or try to draw the foul. Yeah, that's something that Man United do well.
That's boring.
I mean, you know, it was never a penalty, first off. It was way outside the box. It baffles me how that is given as a penalty. It did. It went to VAR.
Yeah, I mean, check if it was in the box.
Yeah, you know, like, that is just, you know, stone wall, never a penalty. But, you know, like, this Liverpool team, you know, they did create a lot of chances. They probably weren't clinical enough. But I do like the front four of Jota, Firmino, Mane and Salah all playing together. You had Firmino dropping even deeper than usual, playing perhaps as a third midfielder or even like a number 10 role, which allows, you know, Salah, Mane, Jota to drift inwards. And I feel like Firmino as a 10 is probably, that's probably better suited for him than up front being a number 9. His speciality, even though he did get a goal, you know, shooting and finishing isn't what he's good at. You know, I mean, this goal, you know, I'd expect anyone, you know, basic rebound. And yeah, going forward, I think Liverpool looks pretty good. And defensively, you know, they were all right. But I wonder with the injury to Fabinho, how well they will get on this weekend. I mean, who have they got this weekend? They've got West Ham. So that could be an interesting game. Obviously, Antonio's out, but you've got Gomez probably teaming up in the defence with, you know, a young kid, unless they're going to try and put potentially Henderson centre-back on Milner. But yeah, in this game, I thought Liverpool looked decent.
They're worse despite a their best.
I
think Liverpool score, he doesn't. I think that Liverpool defence.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
He's a defensive round data, deep lying trick with Batista, false nine, pressing centre-half forward, 9.5. That's what Firmino is. That's his role. Yeah. I mean, so he's like Takeshi 6'9". Oh, I was going to play middle wing. Oh, no idea. It was clearly, yeah, when he made that video.
If they had got Werner, would be probably in double for
Yeah, I think Werner would definitely have been well suited to this fluid Liverpool front three / front four. You know, we could see potentially Jota move into that Firmino role. I feel like he would definitely be well suited to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think Firmino as a striker is a way forward. I do like Firmino overall as a player. I feel like he definitely has a role in this Liverpool team. But as the number 9, I don't think at that level.
His role?
To be a false 9, essentially. What I've gathered is Firmino is a false 9. He drops deeper, and that allows Mane and Salah to cut inside and get. But he doesn't do that well.
Play the centre. Do they have Roberts, Trent?
Yeah, which is why Mane and Salah drift inside.
No
they
point.
Can afford to. Yeah, exactly, it's a fucking oxymoron. As for Sheffield United, I think they looked relatively decent in this game. I mean, you know, you can't really judge on a performance against Liverpool. But they're still looking for that first win. Sitting 19th, 3 goals scored, 9 conceded, minus 6 goal difference. It's a far cry from the Sheffield United that we saw last season. You know, I think the injury to Jack O'Connell is definitely playing a big part to that. But yeah, they just don't look at the level that they did last season. They don't look as fit. They don't look as hungry. You know, overall, they just don't look as good. I wonder what's missing. You know, obviously, Jack O'Connell is the easy thing to point the finger at. Yeah, a striker could be another one. Rhian Brewster hasn't exactly hit the ground running as of yet. Obviously, he showed his quality at Swansea City last season. And I'm a big fan of McBurnie personally. But, you know, there's someone there that wasn't there last season. And I feel like missing Henderson and O'Connell is a big loss for him. They were the two key players last season.
Talking about him getting a...
Well, we're about both of them. Yeah, we can do. I'll let you start. Anyway.
I'm pretty much wrapped up in the first half. Everton were well off last to Spartan last.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they just, you know, the going forward at the very least, they just looked pretty awful. Everton. I mean, I know that they were missing, you know, key players. Gylfi Sigurdsson ended up having to start in midfield. Alexis Iwobi ended up starting out on the left hand side. But you know, this is why I feel, you know, that Everton won't finish top four this year, because they lack depth. You know, you take out one or two key players, and all of a sudden they don't look as good. You know, Coleman wasn't able to start, Sigurdsson had to start over Gomez, Richarlison was out, Digne's going to be out for the next three games, off, you know, a pretty bad challenge. And yeah, this Everton team, they look dependent on having everyone fit and available, and when they don't, they, you know, they didn't really create much.
It was with Alan Sigurdsson far away in the player that a boy be flop.
Well, I thought it was more than that. I thought it was near 40 million. I could be wrong though. And as for Southampton though, this is more the Southampton that we saw towards the end of last season, the Southampton that I was predicting would challenge for Europe. I think, you know, Che Adams has seemingly finally found his groove in the Southampton team. I think alongside Danny Ings, it could be a very good partnership. It took him a while to adapt to top flight football, but he seems to have finally kicked on. And, you know, Southampton do look a very strong side. They're not missing Højbjerg. Romeu has stepped up very well. And yeah, they're just far and away the best side.
They've proven in the last couple of games, side, this game, they can keep out a deadly force like.
What's that?
They kept Everton.
Only two on target. I mean, you know, they just didn't create anything. Like, it was just very poor. Calvert-Lewin was quiet up front. You know, there's just the intensity, the quick passes that they had last season just wasn't there. And, you know, they easily, Mina and Keane just got torn apart by that Ings.
Yeah, and registered to it.
He definitely has a lot to his game, Danny Ings. I mean, last season we saw his predator's instinct, you know, being one goal shy of the golden boot. And this season we are seeing more of him as a creator, someone who can drop deep, facilitate chances. And at the end of the day, Danny Ings is going to have more people marking him than Che Adams, because of his both players' performances last season. So Hasenhüttl's smart in, you know, telling him, drop deeper, get the players marking on you, and then release Adams, who can get in behind quickly. Like, that's, you know, really smart tactics, because players have to mark Ings tight, but that just opens up gaps.
Spender, they've definitely improved.
Yeah, I think a top-quality centre-half could propel Southampton really highly. I'm a fan of both the midfield and attack, but I think, you know, a top quality centre half is needed. Salisu hasn't played this season. You know, I thought that he'd come in and be, you know, a really decent little acquisition for £10 million, but obviously he's not fit, or Hasenhüttl just doesn't like him. But yeah, they could do with going out and spending, you know, 15, 20 million on a proper centre half.
I think they're the right man. They're good on the breadwinner.
I mean, I guess so. I mean, I'm a fan of Stuart Armstrong personally. Well, he has found success playing out wide. I think Theo Walcott is a more than serviceable enough backup for where Southampton are. But if you ask me to strengthen any of those four midfielders, I would say Armstrong is probably the weak link of the four, but I still think he's a decent one. I mean, we'll move on to Wolves and Newcastle. Newcastle getting a late winner from a Murphy free kick. You know, there's just a poor wall position from Patricio. A late equaliser, my apologies. I mean, Bruce really shaped things up with his team selection. And, you know, at the end of the day, it worked out. A draw away at Wolves is a good result for Newcastle.
This was a two-like hurt. This was a two highlight game. Pick up didn't call threat in third. Wolves did dominate the ball. They did have loads, but were able to. And the Jacob Murphy, that probably could.
Oh, yeah.
But the him.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're talking about Everton. You take a couple of players out and they look a lot weaker of a side. But you're looking at Wolves as well. And, you know, the same thing applies, really. They just don't look. I don't know. The team just looks a lot weaker than last season. I mean, you know, they have brought in a few decent players. I think Fabio Silva, obviously, is one for the future. But he's a decent little player. Vitinha, good little midfielder. Semedo on the right could be, you know, a decent acquisition. But they have lost a lot of key players. You know, you look at players like Matt Doherty, Diogo Jota. You know, they loaned out the likes of Gibbs White and Ruben Vinagre. They've lost quite a few key players. And, you know, when you get some injuries, like had to Johnny, this Wolves team doesn't look, it looks very weak. You know, you're looking at players like Saïss, like Kilman, who, in my opinion, aren't good enough for where Wolves want to be, which is, you know, playing in the Europa League. Go on.
Why you thought Saïss wing back?
Yeah, that confused me. Yeah, that was weird. But, you know, I don't know. It's just, you know. I mean, he's only on loan, isn't he? I ignore it. I'm wrong. Yeah. So, at the end of the day, Nuno is probably going to pick his own players over him. But I would like to see some chances, at least. And the same with Keanu Hoover as well. I think he's the right back. He was unlucky at Liverpool because Klopp basically chose Neco Williams over him. And obviously, they've got Trent as well. So they brought in Hoover as part of the deal for Diogo Jota. Well, they got Hoover before they got Semedo. Like, it was, I think it was £30 million plus Hoover for Jota at Liverpool. Because Liverpool knew they needed a right back. I think he's just a decent little player. I don't know why Nuno's not picking him when Johnny's injured. I mean, for me, he'd be my, you know, second choice left back. I don't know. This Wolves team just doesn't look. It just doesn't look great. Like, and to say that these last two seasons, Wolves, you know, they've finished seventh place. This team looks nowhere near finishing second place. I mean, if anything, it looks more like a bottom half team. You know, if you take out Raúl Jiménez from this team, very, very average.
Charmer.
Yeah, I mean, I still think he's a decent little player, Traoré. But, you know, I don't know. It's just, you know, he's not fired as well this season as he did last season. I still think he is quality. You know, I've never seen anyone that big, you know, run that fast. Like, it's just you know, astonishing. But this season, you know, he hasn't been at the level that he was last season. And yeah, Wolves, they've lost quite a few key players. They do seem like they're struggling to adapt. They do have a lot of young players in that system who aren't ready yet, but, you know, if you look, you know, a year's time, they could potentially be. It was, you know, again, not the best game. What did you make of this? It was a very interesting matchup. Yeah. I mean, I can't argue with you there. Under has, I don't think he started for Leicester yet. So, you know, it's good to see him popping up with an assist. It's another attacking option for Leicester, you know, alongside, you know, Barnes and Madison, and obviously Vardy and Nacho. They have got options going forward. This Arsenal team, they're so hit and miss. I think the way Arteta sets up his teams is very defensive. It's very negative. Not that there's anything necessarily wrong with that. You know, at the end of the day, you've got to work with what players you have. Playing defensive football isn't necessarily a bad thing, but when you've got players like Aubameyang, Saka, Lacazette, you know, you've got Tierney as a wing back, you've got players like Ceballos, you've got Thomas Partey, you've got a lot of threat going forward, a lot of thrust, a lot of direct players. Sitting deeper isn't necessarily getting the best out of them. I think this was the first time this season that Arsenal have outpossessed their opponent. And that's, you know, that's not great.
Yeah, I mean, if the chances they had fallen to Aubameyang, they would have probably.
I think he started out really well, Lacazette. But he's just sort of trailed off. I think, you know, how much did Lacazette cost? It was like 50 million. Yeah, so for a player like that, you probably want more bang for your buck if they're costing you upwards of 50 million. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily consider him a flop, but I don't think he's hit the heights. Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, I wouldn't call him a flop, but I don't think he's necessarily hit the heights that were perhaps expected of him. So, yeah, it probably is a disappointment.
I'm getting, I mean, props to substitute great.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Leicester perform this season. Obviously, they've got the Europa League to contest with. They're currently sitting in fourth place, so not too dissimilar to last season. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they fare playing on two fronts. Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. One thing I wanted to touch on with Arsenal before we move on. William Saliba has not been included in the Premier League squad for Arsenal. 19-year-old centre-back, you know, cost $25 million or something for Saliba. They didn't loan him out this season because they wanted him to get some decent... and he cannot play until, at the very least, January for Arsenal. It seems like very poor mismanagement. I could be wrong, but I swear I saw Summer what said he wasn't included in the squad.
That's why Burnley...
Could be.
There was a player who...
Oh, no, he wasn't registered for the Europa League squad.
Yeah, because remember on day they didn't have to register a player who he then days before the game because he wasn't registered at every player's.
Oh yeah, I remember day, that story. Yeah, they have to forfeit it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think less the Europa League, their group.
Yeah, should they, you know, get deeper into the Europa League? It will be interesting to see whether, you know, they can be like Wolves and get relatively deep into the competition. Have you got what else you want to add on? Yeah, we can do. Move on to Burnley and Spurs. A very good performance, I'd say. We looked back to our best, definitely. It was just that the strikers were anything. We made plenty of chances. We looked very solid defensive. We were by far the better team. We definitely deserved at least a point from but we were just out Burnley. Like, we've done that to so many teams in the past. Yeah, but it's definitely encouraging. I think Dwight looked very impressive. I think Westy and Brown hit really well as well. Park. We couldn't finish. So we were by far the best. And we were just unlucky to be caught out with a corner. The pundits seem to, and the commentators seem to think that, oh, what a brilliant set piece. They must have worked on that, Kane and Son. It wasn't. Kane just got lucky that his shit header fell to Son at the back post. We were definitely unlucky. I think we definitely deserved something. Very good defensive work there from Kane. Clearing it off the line. I mean, I thought that was in, personally. Five goals and eight assists in his first six games. Yeah.
This game, favourite.
For the title? Yeah, I think Mourinho definitely tactically got it right. We saw he dropped Reguilón. He played players like Davies, like Dyer, like Sissoko, like Doherty. He brought those players in because he knew that, you know, playing Burnley is a different type of game than playing West Ham. You know, we're a lot more physical of a team, so he needs to bring in the physical players. That's a sign of a very good tactician there. You know, we've seen multiple times Spurs making, you know, two changes, three changes at half time under Mourinho. He's not afraid to change things up, and I think that that's definitely something that will serve Spurs well. I think Son, apart from the goal, was relatively quiet. I think a half-fit Matty Loughton did really well at defending him. But yeah, the one player who stood out for me anyway was Ndombele. I think he played really well in the centre of the park. Definitely the most direct player they had all game. I think he could definitely turn into a player at Spurs after a very troubled first season.
Well, Spurs goals are holding, and the fact that he's direct. Does that's
Yeah, I mean, that It's surprising you said that, because he looks very good driving forward, to me anyway.
That's very good.
So he's more of a box-to-box type then?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, there's not really that much else to add on to the game anyway, unless you've got what else you want to add. Yeah. That's coming up on Sunday, on Halloween night. I'm sure you'll definitely be paying the 15 quid to watch it. I most certainly will be watching it through legal means. But yeah, I just wanted to really quickly touch on the takeover talks at Burnley. Obviously, we've discussed ALK and their potential move to try and buy Burnley. That is apparently still in the books, but they aren't the favourites anymore. The favourites are now... and the favourites now is some Egyptian guy and Chris Farnell. Chris Farnell is famous for ruining Bolton, Bury, Charlton. He lost money when he was involved in Sainsbury's. He bought a private school, then stripped it of its assets and closed it. He's basically killed every business. So I pray to God that I play Alec Garlick. I really do play Alec Garlick. But at the end of the day, Garlick runs the business. We're not in any debt. We own all of his assets. We have a steady income. Garlick doesn't take any wage. Yeah, we don't spend as much as we probably have to in the transfer. But in terms of running us as a business, we are really well run. We're not going to go bankrupt. Under Chris Farnell, I have no fucking... Like, at best, we turn into Sunderland. And at worst, we turn into Bury. So, you know, yeah, it's very worrying. What's that?
Exciting times.
Very exciting. I think, you know, both ALK and Farnell, from the reports, they both want to be there by January. So I think within the next 2 months, we'll know how the fate of Burnley will be for the next 10 years. If ALK come in, I think we'll be definitely have a positive next decade. I think Alan Pace is reportedly a very big fan of Sean Dyche and would want to keep him around and wants to build a team around him. He wants to invest with Sean Dyche. And with Mike Garlick, he would be kept around. With Farnell, he's got such a history of stripping assets that there is no doubt in my mind that Sean Dyche would be gone within 6 months of him coming into the club. Because Sean Dyche is the highest earner, you know, more than any of the club. You know, Sean Dyche would go, Nick Pope would go, Tarkowski would go, McNeil would go, Chris Wood would go. You know, all those sort of players would leave under Farnell. I'm pretty sure of that. He has such a history of being an asset, and I just pray to God that we do not get Chris Farnell.
You think Mike Garlick, a Burnley, have a bit of a say in his club, so he'd go with ALK and does know about the back the Egyptian guy and Farnell?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Farnell has literally just had his license given back. He was banned from being an owner by the EFL, and he's just got his license back now. You know, like, it's absolutely ridiculous. And Garlick has said repeatedly that he would only sell for the benefit of the club, that he's turned down multiple offers that he didn't feel was right in years gone by. And that's all well and good. But if he sells to Chris Farnell, then he has failed this football club. I'm sorry. It's just, you know, an utter joke. Like, apparently, according to reports, it's all done. They're just waiting for the Premier League to confirm it. And I mean, you know, at the end of the day, if the Premier League confirms Chris Farnell to be a new owner, but they rejected the Newcastle owner, that is absolutely fucking crooked. I'm sorry, but they'll accept fucking Chris Farnell to come into Burnley because he'll ruin them. We don't want Burnley in the Premier League. Fuck them, they're boring. Or, but you know, some Saudi coming in to try and boost Newcastle so that they might contend for top six, so that they might rise up to be challenging the establishment. Oh no, fuck that, we don't want new, you know, that is absolutely ridiculous. Like, if this move goes through, the Premier League, Mike Garlick, Chris Farnell, everyone has to be fucking held accountable for it, because it'll be a fucking joke if Chris Farnell is able to run a, not if he is able to run a football club, then it's an absolute joke. I'm sorry, like, but it is.
I've read Burnley supporters saying, you're not just selling a club.
Yeah, it is. Like, the football club is the heart of the town. Like, we more often than not sell out the stadium. You know, Turf Moor seats 22,000 and 80,000 people live in Burnley. Like, that just shows the amount of support that they have in the local community. Like, Turf Moor is one of the few Premier League stadiums what is slap bang in the middle of town. Like, you've got houses next door to it. Like, you know, it's the heart of the community. Burnley does so much for the community as well. They're involved in loads of charities and loads of work in the community. And I've no doubt that that would be absolutely fucking stripped under Chris Farnell because, you know, that's not profitable. Like, it's just, it's an absolute joke. If Farnell runs a football, it's a joke. He has no, the Egyptian guy has no, the fake bank account. Like, and I think it's an absolute joke if they manage to get in. God, I just want ALK to hurry up. Apparently, ALK were interested in buying last season. They were wanting to buy 6 months ago, but obviously because of coronavirus, that had to be sold. Oh, I hope to God ALK. But, you know, at the very least, like, if we can't get ALK, just keep Garlick. I'd much rather have Mike Garlick, because at the end of the day, if we have Mike Garlick as our owner, I know that he'll have a foot under Chris Farnell. Who the fuck knows?
Petition. Can that have any bearing?
It probably won't. I was just, like, I mean, hopefully it does, because that might make the FA scared or something, like, not want to give him back. I don't know. Like, I don't know. No Charlton fan has anything positive to say about him. That should just speak volume. Like, it's just an absolute joke, honestly.
His resume, the fact that Mike Garlick is taining idea to pretty.
Yeah, exactly. Because at the end of the day, I don't know if Burnley's going to exist in 10 years' time if they sell to Farnell. Like, you know, it's just, you know. See, it's really depressing. Actually, it's really depressing. Oh, God. I hope to God the Premier League steps in and says no. You'd think they have to say no, surely. If they say no to the Newcastle, surely they've got to say no to these lot. Like,
if it Burnley have...
Then we're fucked. We are fucked if it goes through.
Yeah, also, you should be able to take the court.
Yeah.
You know, Bolton.
Yeah, well, some of our friends have threatened to go to the court of arbitration. And I mean, Farnell's a crafty little fucker as well. Because, like, he knows that because there's no fans allowed, there's no one to fucking protest against it.
Mm.
Like, if fans were allowed in stadiums, there'd be fucking banners out. There'd be, you know, protests saying, you're not fucking selling to Farnell. And that crafty little dickhead knows it. Like, have you seen it? Some of the videos of it? It looks like such a cocky little twat. Like,
nah, I've only heard stories and read.
Well, a couple of Charlton fans went up to him and confronted him. Because, you know, of some of the shit that he's done, you know, about, like, the car, for example, you know, 200 grand of the club's money went on a club car that Farnell owns, and he still hasn't given it back. Like, so they went and confronted him about it, and he was just being a cocky little twat, little dickhead, like, just sat there being all smarmy and little shit. Like, honest to God, if it can't happen. Surely it can't happen. Oh, man,
ALK?
Yeah. I've no idea.
It's not a person.
I think it's two people who represent Firma going into buy it. Alan Pace is they ran Salt Lake City from what I've heard. I'd much rather sell them because they want to keep the current system in place, just being invested. Which you'd think that'd be something that Garlick would want, but you know, it's really sad. God, I hope it's... But at the end of the day, we'll know within a month or two what's going to happen.
Burnley, dude.
You can't do fuck all. We cannot do jack shit, you know. The best that we can do is fucking put replies to the social media, like, posts saying we don't want Farnell. But that's not going to do anything, you know. He's a crafty little dickhead, Farnell. Because we can't go into stadiums. We can't do mass gatherings. We can't do pro... You know, we can't do anything to stop him. We can't do anything to voice our displeasure. We can't do fuck all, you know. If crowds were allowed back into games, there would be protests against Chris Farnell. I guarantee you that. And if Farnell does buy, as soon as crowds are allowed back in, there will be protests again. But they're not going to do anything because he'll already be in power. So, you know, we can't do anything. And it's depressing to think about.
Well, surely they have a selling to him.
Oh, 100%. You know. For all the shit that Garlick comes out with, oh, I'm a Burnley fan, I want to do what's right for Burnley, you know. I'll only sell if it benefits Burnley. If he sells to Chris Farnell, he has failed this football club and he has failed the town. 100%. You know, just complete and utter bollocks that he's been spouting. All of it. All the fucking memories. All how he's ran the club well. He's overseen promotions. All of it will be forgotten if he sells to Farnell. It'll all go down the shitter. Just like the football club will go down the shitter if he sells to Farnell.
Well, I'm looking forward to AFC.
Oh, it's fucking depressing. Well, there already is an AFC Burnley, so I don't know what the fuck we'd be.
And Rangers.
Yeah. There's already an AFC Burnley. There's already a Burnley United. So, I don't know.
We could do that.
Yeah.
We'd be...
What, so 1882 Burnley then? Yeah. Oh, it's fucking depressing to think about, Harry. I need a drink, fucking hell. Yeah. Well, no, I don't mean a fucking fruit shoot, do I?
Yeah.
Let me go and get a fucking Emerge. Like, that'll help me calm me down, fucking blue Emerge. Do you not have Emerges down south?
Probably, I don't.
Yeah. Fucking, you know, like, in corner shops, fucking 30p bottles of Emerge. They're like blue and green and shit.
I ain't touching that.
Nah, they're class.
I remember when I was a kid, I had like two Relentless shaken. Yeah, I'm never.
Yeah, but that's because you're funny though, isn't it? Like,
no, it scared the shit out of me. Like, you know, 12-year-old Relentless cans that are like 500. I realised.
Did you not have Emerge? I want to send you. I genuinely can't believe you didn't have Emerge.
Was it like a shitty Powerade?
Sort of, yeah, but it was like probably tasted better than Powerade.
Is it basically just.
I've sent you a photo of it.
I know, I've seen it. Yeah. But Powerade tastes.
Yeah, Emerge tastes better than Powerade.
Oh, yeah, the old isotonic. So,
it's not up.
It's probably got fucking Towering.
It probably does, but there's still not up with it.
What Towering
is? Isn't it like fucking, like, thingy?
Ah, yeah.
No, it's like that thing what's in animals, isn't it? Like, in they have in, like, the guts.
Yeah, it's a Towering Taurus.
Oh, yeah.
It's a sperm.
I thought it was just, like, bile.
Oh, yeah, that's probably why I didn't drink it.
I'm just looking at the fucking horoscope for Taurus now. We've got way off track. Fucking Taurus dislikes, complications, insecurity of any kind. Well, that's fucking anyone, isn't it? No one likes fucking insecurities. No one likes stuff being complicated. Fucking hell, honestly. But Taurus likes romance, spending time with friends. Who doesn't like that? I swear to God, man. It's funny. It's really funny. What are we? Because you're like, is it the ninth you? No, it's the third, isn't it? Fuck, when is it? Fourth, yeah. I knew it was roughly near my time. So what are we then? Libra, is that it? Right, I'm going to look up Libra. I've never looked up my zodiac sign. Dislikes loudmouths, injustice. Likes sharing with others. Fucking, oh, that's so... oh, what the fuck is this? as Libra will tend to gravitate. No shit! Oh, my God. What is that? Anyway, what did you say we skipped? Oh, right. Well, you can talk about Brighton and West Brom then.
My call on.
Yeah, I can't really remember this game. Again, Brighton have only got one win of the season. And again, a decent performance goes pretty much realistically at home against West Brom. You're looking for a win, aren't you? Yes, you are. I'm not going to disagree with you. But you're not a sh**. That's not. To be honest with you, not really. I better just move on to Europe then. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll get straight into Champions League. Any games stick out for you? Yeah. That was my first go-to as well. Leipzig have been raided. Not even that hard, really, Leipzig. But, again, they do look like... I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, they look like a shell of their former self. Not really watched any Bundesliga. But the loss of Werner, you know, they don't have Luckman, Wolf, you know, Ampadu's gone, Schick's gone. They have lost quite a few players. And they've tried to replace Timo Werner with Solo. I mean, I like Pulse. I think last season he had a really good partnership. But now that Werner's gone, he feels like a shell of his. I mean, this Leipzig team's good. You know, like, you've got Danny Olmo in midfield, who I'm a big fan. You've got Nkunku. You know, you've got, you know, what's his name? That Austrian midfield. No. The defensive. Konrad Leimer, I'm a big fan of it. You know, at the back, you've got Upamecano, Konate, Klosterman's a decent little keeper, despite performance against Man United. So they've got a decent little team, but you take out Timo Werner, they're just as good. Simple as that. Yeah. I mean, Rashford, you know, he was only on the pitch for less than half an hour and got a hat-trick. Like, he is just a quality striker as Rashford. There's no doubt about that. And again, Henderson not even getting a start in Europe now. Seems like, oh, he doesn't trust him. Well, I mean, I think it's only the one start for Henderson, and that was in the League Cup, I think. And it's not just me, is it? But United look a far better side with Donny van de Beek, to me, anyway. Like, I don't understand why he isn't playing more. I mean, you know, I said at the beginning of the season that I don't think a Pogba van de Beek double pivot would have worked. I think it was probably too offensive. But Matic isn't playing. We're seeing Scott McTominay and Fred being put next to Paul Pogba. So, you know, like, you might as well play van de Beek rather than McTominay or Fred. I mean, I like Fred. Fred has stepped up in a big way. I still don't think he's £60 million, but he has stepped up to be a good little midfielder. But I'd still play van de Beek.
Yeah, I might.
Right, what about now? A little bit. Don't know what's up. Right, is that any better? Right. Another thing to point out as well, Real Madrid as well got only to the 80th, and the 94th minute. Oh, yeah. Again, Real Madrid not looking at their best against, it's not brilliant to him. Did you hear Benzema as well? Apparently, Benzema, Ferland, Mendy don't pass to, and neither Mendy nor Benzema made a pass. No, he doesn't seem to have that in.
Style.
Yeah, because, I mean, between Benzema and Jovic, you have two strikers that are very competent in the air, so you can't afford to get crosses in. Well, yeah? Yeah, that's not a good look. I mean, yeah, it was unfortunate that we couldn't see Ronaldo versus again. And yeah, Juventus probably could have done with Ronaldo. I was looking forward to see Arta play as well against Barca. You'd have thought he'd have had a point to prove, especially against Messi. You know, when Arta left, more than likely because he. But yeah, obviously we. I'm a big fan of Pedri as well. I think Pedri played really well. Yeah, between him and Ansu, Barca have some really really good, young, exciting wingers. I mean, I know Ansu Fati, there's a lot of his contract's up in the air. There's a lot of legal going on. But yeah, Barca could have two really solid young wingers on there. Yeah. Who's Ronald Adjuro? I'd never heard of him. Yeah, he started, he played the first half of before coming off. Is he from La Masia, right? I didn't know if Barca had signed him. So are PK and Umtiti both injured? Don't really stand out to me. I mean, Moise Keane getting a brace. Yeah, rather than Alex Iwobi, Bernard and Gylfi Sigurdsson supplying you, you've got Neymar and Mbappe, exactly. And, you know, of course, you can't have a Champions League game week without Erling Haaland. I mean, again, credit to you, because you completely called your shot. You know, like, he's absolutely mental. Yeah, you should have done. You've got a bit of... yeah, anyway, we're going to move on to Europa League. Unless you've got any more Champions League games you want to go through. I mean, there's one game in particular I'm sure you want to... Yeah, we're going to look at Celtic-Lille, obviously. Celtic bottling a 2-0 lead. I was about to say that surprises. He did look a very good... Genk or Ghent? It was Ghent. But Lille do have a very good... they have a very exciting squad. You know, they've got David, Yazici, Ikone. They've got Timmy Weah. Renato Sanchez looks like he's back to his best. So they do have a very good, exciting squad. Refresh my memory. Yeah, I remember. That was quite... But yeah, Lille, like you say, were... but yeah, Lille do definitely look a promising side. Well, I was referring to Royal Antwerp Spurs. You know, the only thing that I know about Royal Antwerp before was their last season. That's the only thing. The fact that they beat Spurs, very funny. We saw, you know, the typical Mourinho changes at half-time. He made four substitutions at half-time, which is very admirable. If it's not working, why should you... No. Wait, Spurs? No. Spurs didn't go. At least I don't think Spurs went. Go somewhere else. You might be thinking, we do more. So. Spurs, they just needed to be... I mean, 15 shots, two on target, especially considering the array of... Yeah, they weren't just missing one point. They were missing a third of them. The name rings a bell. Vaguely, he must be knocking on a bit. Norwich, It always makes me laugh when I'm here in Norwich, because I always remember that Arsenal fans to Arsene Wenger, please can you sign Messi, Ronaldo and Cameron Jerome? You know, the big three.
Oh,
no. Oh yeah, Richard Delatter, he just doesn't look fit. Which, I mean, when he hasn't played for him, he's not going to be fit. But you'd think Spurs are trying to ease him in, but at the end of the day, they're going to be paying, at the very least, 100 grand a week. Want him to be able to at least play 90. Well, you know, you don't do it. You don't even walk to the next. He's driven. You probably get the same amount of exercise playing with normal golf. I mean, both to play and to. I'll take darts over golf. I mean, if you're there, it's an outlet that sticks out for me. Arsenal won 3-0 against Dundalk. Yeah, there's not really sticking out. What else you want to cover in the world? Ah, yeah, I saw that as well. It's the biggest win in Ajax. Ah, right. Yeah. That's it. I think about else. So, yeah, have you got all to plug, Harry? Yeah, and I'll plug mine at BFC. And you can follow the podcast at AntiFootballPod. Yeah, that's it from us. See you later.